Welcome to Let's Talk Adoption. I'm Heather.
And I'm Kim. Today we're playing a game we call Adoption Acronym Bingo.
If you're just starting adoption or, you know, anywhere in the process and feeling overwhelmed by adoption lingo, adoption abbreviations, trust me, you are not alone. Today we're going to decode and discuss some of the most common acronyms we've seen in adoption, and we might toss in a few fun ones we wish existed too.
And if you are feeling a little more seasoned in the world and language of adoption, perhaps you might be able to guess ahead at what these mean as we tell you the different questions or bingo items in our game today.
So let's jump in with some of the abbreviations you might hear when you're speaking to an adoption attorney or an adoption agency. And the first one is ICPC. Now, if you're doing domestic adoption, it probably is something that you are going to encounter if you are adopting across state lines. ICPC stands for the Interstate Compact on the Placement of Children. And it is something that kind of is required when an adoptive family crosses their own state line to adopt a child who is born in or living in another state. I think the best definition of what ICPC really is that it is an agreement that binds every state to really track the placement of children to ensure that all the laws in each state are honored and followed as children are transferred from one state to another. It really, the goal is to protect the child and to protect the adoption. And just to explain a little more, if ICPC is new to you, it is something that your attorney will take care of. The only real effect you will feel from ICPC is waiting for clearance to travel. The legal aspect of the adoption has to be approved by both the sending state, which is the state your child is born in or is living in, and the receiving state, which is the state you call home. Once both those states approve it, which usually takes a few days, then you get to travel back home.
Mm-hmm. And it's typically 7 to 10 business days, unless it's maybe around the holidays, maybe a little longer.
Right. So let's move on, Kim. Next on our list is TPR. And that just at its base stands for Termination of Parental Rights. And often with private domestic adoption, they may call it TPR, but what it's talking about is the consents. Because most domestic adoptions are not so much where the birth parent's rights are being terminated by the courts or the state. That's what we find more in foster adoption. That's where you may hear the phrase TPR quite a bit more. And that is when the courts have determined that it is in the child's best interest to be adopted. In private adoption, you may hear it as TPR, but it really is consents. And that's when the birth mother is signing the consents to allow her child to be adopted. I guess that is also can be true of the birth father or any placing parents through this. And again, what we are most familiar with is voluntary, but in the case of foster adoption, it is court ordered.
Mm-hmm. And this happens once the baby is born or when the birth mom has decided to place a child that's already born. So TPR or consents can't be taken until the child is at least born. And every state has different timelines on when this can take place and also what paperwork specifically the birth parent or placing parent needs to complete. And the adoption attorney takes care of all these details.
Definitely. So Kim, why don't you talk a little bit about our next one, which is HS.
Yes, HS is such a handy acronym because how many times are we talking about the adoption home study and we really wish we could just shorten it to HS?
Right.
Well, you know, interoffice, we do shorten it to HS all the time. But yes, HS is home study, the legal evaluation of a family's readiness to adopt. And this is measured by the different requirements in your state. So it's done by your social worker that you hire. And takes about, in private domestic adoption, takes about 6 to 8 weeks. Includes things like your background check, physical, home tour inspection, interviews, and paperwork and documents. So the legal evaluation of your ability to adopt and parent the child that you wish to adopt, the home mm-hmm. study.
And for if you're adopting through foster care, the home study is still a requirement. It can take a little bit longer for foster care, just because typically it isn't done by a private social worker. It often is done through the state. And for international adoption, it's going to be dependent on the country you're adopting from and definitely can take longer as well. Mm-hmm. So just be aware. In fact, if you are a family starting a home study, that's a great question to ask, is about how long does this process take and what can I do to be sure that, you know, I'm not holding it up. So, mm-hmm. so our next acronym is POA, which stands for Power of Attorney.
Yeah.
And where I know where we have seen it come up frequently is for military families. If one spouse is deployed, but they are in the adoption process, often the spouse that is stateside will have power of attorney. And certainly it's not just for adoption. I know often they give power of attorney for any number of things that can come up while they are overseas serving. So that is something that we do see fairly commonly. In adoption, we can see that it's a little more rare, but after birth, if an agency is acting on behalf of a parent. So mm-hmm. it can come up any number of places.
And generally military spouses do have a power of attorney or POA, but sometimes they might need a special power of attorney for something that's like this, that is just for a short period of time.
Right. So let's switch gears a little bit and start talking about acronyms that describe who's who in the adoption process. And I think the first one is EM.
And I will say, side note, these are always evolving as the conversations evolve. These acronyms as to how we refer to the birth mother or EM, expectant mother, that has actually changed in recent years with the internet and conversations and chats and Facebook groups and things. There was an evolution away from using the term birth mother more to using the term EM, expectant mother, for a variety of reasons. But just know when you see EM, it means the expectant mother, the woman who is pregnant and considering adoption. And it really was something to recognize that the adoption hasn't taken place yet, and she still has the choice to make. So sometimes people who hear the term birth mother assume adoption has already happened. And that's certainly still used today, like BM, or we prefer to say B mom, mm-hmm. birth mom, mm-hmm. Is still used today. But we just have to remember context, right? Where are we in the adoption story? Who is she in the adoption story? But EM is often used for expectant mother. Mm-hmm.
And what about EP? Now, you should have a good guess on at least the first word.
Expectant parents. So that's when both parents are involved, or in the context when we're referring to the placing mother and the placing father, or expectant parents, whomever right. they may be, who have legal rights to make this placement. Am we getting in the weeds a little?
A little. And I think that's why I love that our next one really kind of pulls us out of the weeds. And you mentioned yes. it just a minute ago. You said PP, placing parent. And, you know, for me, I think this is the best way to describe and identify who in the adoption triad is choosing to place this child for adoption. Because, you know, I know certainly in my career, I've worked with placing parents of all ages and roles. I've worked with grandmas. You know, I remember years ago working with, well, one grandma called and then we spoke to the other grandma. They were two grandmas who were trying to raise their twin 3-year-old grandchildren. One was the birth mother's mother, one was the birth father's mother. And one of the father had passed away, the mother was in addiction, and they had come to this realization that they could not parent twins like this for the next 15 years. And so they were looking to make an adoption plan. Now, neither of them are what I would consider to be the birth mother, because obviously neither of them gave birth to the children, but certainly they were the ones who had the rights and could make the choice to place the children for adoption. And so they would be identified as a placing parent. Just to jump to the end of that story, Kim, is they actually were able to find a family to adopt the children together who was so ready for an open adoption and to let both grandmas still be grandma. So they really kind of developed this new family unit, and it was really a blessing to the adoptive parents who they had already lost their mothers. So it's almost like they adopted these two children and got the bonus of two grandmas in the deal. So it really was a beautiful adoption, a beautiful story. And in this case, the grandmas were, to use our acronyms, the PPs, or the placing parents.
Mm-hmm. And I really love that term, the placing parent, even to refer to the woman who gave birth to the child, because right, she's already given birth. She's not technically an expectant mother, right? If she's placing a 2-year-old, the term placing parent is inclusive of her and her story, right, and doesn't alienate her by insinuating that, well, actually, we only have terms for women who give birth and place a child immediately. So I really love the term placing parent, and I hope right, we can all start to use that a lot more often.
Absolutely. It also helps to identify who in this this scenario has the legal right to place the child, mm-hmm, because that is who the attorney is going to need to work with. And that is, you know, they will play the important role in decision-making if it is a domestic adoption.
Circling back around a moment to an acronym for birth mothers, we try to lead by example and not just say BM. We always mm-hmm try to just type out be mom. We mm-hmm feel like that's a little bit more appropriate, because certainly BM is also a medical term, mm-hmm, and can come across in a different way. So we always fully type out be mom instead mm-hmm of birth mother instead of BM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So BF, you know, mm-hmm, I think most people, when you hear BF, the first thought is boyfriend, which certainly BF can be an acronym for boyfriend. But in the adoption space, what we see more commonly is birth father. Mm-hmm. And I think the interesting thing when you are working in adoption is there can be more than one BF. There can be who is the biological birth father. There can be who is the legal birth father, which is sometimes also called the presumed birth father, which someone can be a presumed birth father or PBF if they are married to the birth mother. They are presumed legally to be the birth father. There can also be an alleged BF, and that is someone who the birth mother thinks is the BF, or she is saying he is the BF. So BF can be spread around to a lot of people in an adoption, but just be aware, in adoption, BF does refer to the birth father, not to anyone's boyfriend.
And if you're wondering, okay, what if there are two or three possible birth father presumed, birth father alleged, birth father's legal husbands. What do we do? How do we make sure that we don't leave ourselves open for the adoption to not go through later on? Well, every attorney who works in adoption is very familiar with their state laws, and every state has a provision, specific, very clear-cut steps for the attorney to complete in order to, ensure that these are addressed by the state law. And that might mean, knocking on the door of more than one possible birth father and getting that paperwork or advising them, depending on what their state laws require. So rest assured that adoption attorneys are very familiar with this.
And, while we're talking about adoption attorneys, Kim, we're going to throw in a bonus acronym here. And it is commonly referred to as Quad A.
Ah, good one.
Mm-hmm. It is AAAA. It is the American Academy of, it used to be Adoption Attorneys. Now it's the American Academy of Adoption and Assisted Reproduction Attorneys. And the reason I want to bring that up is because if you need a solid, experienced adoption attorney, the Quad A website is often one of the best places to start. It doesn't mean that an adoption attorney isn't experienced if they are not a member of Quad A. I know a number of attorneys who are phenomenal adoption attorneys, but they don't have Quad A membership. But it is a good place to start. And they often, if you go on the website, they often will also list their specialties. And like I say, some is adoption, some is assisted reproduction. But if you hear that Quad A, that's what that is referring to, is the American Academy of Adoption Attorneys.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because sometimes people just don't know where to start, and maybe they don't have an agency or even need an agency. Maybe they're going to do a type of adoption where the child's already identified and they just need just an adoption attorney. Well,
right.
Quad A or the new name is a great resource. But just remember, if you are working with an adoption professional and you have that existing relationship, ask your adoption professional first who they'll refer you to, who they've worked with over the years.
Definitely. Because there are specialties, and certainly adoption law is a specialty. And if you are working with a professional, they are going to have good, solid relationships from probably years of working together. And you want to be sure you're taking advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
So next on the list is AP.
Ah, yes. Well, adoptive parents, right? I think this is a term that started to, or an acronym that started to pop up, at least for me. I started to notice it more in the era of social media, because kind of giving a sneak peek ahead to the next one, the common term or acronym was always AF, adoptive family. But sometimes people don't feel that that is inclusive of their scenario, such as a single adoptive mom may not feel that adoptive family refers to her, even though the adoption professional is referring to her as the adoptive family. But maybe the term AP feels more inclusive because it's simply the adoptive parent or parents. So it doesn't give any assumption that there is, a two-parent home adopting the child, that it recognizes that there are single parents out there adopting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This next one is one of the most misunderstood in adoption, and that is PRE.
Mm-hmm.
PRE. And that stands for something we see really only in newborn adoption. This isn't something you're going to see really in foster adoption, adopting an older child, or in international adoption at all. PRE stands for pregnancy-related expenses. And in most states, expectant mothers are entitled to receive help with their pregnancy-related expenses. Now, these can include rent, food, maternity clothes, transportation, medical costs. What's allowed really depends on the laws of the expectant mother's state. And so what's allowed by state really varies, not just the amounts, but also the type of expenses that can that she can receive help with. So, most families, when you're doing a domestic newborn adoption, they set a budget for that. And most agencies, most ethical agencies, will really try to ensure that the pregnancy-related expenses are in line with the intent of the state laws.
And so when you are speaking with an adoption professional, it's good to ask their experience with this. What are the average totals that they see in PRE, pregnancy-related expenses? What are the different categories that they typically allow in their planning? How it's managed? Is it a lump sum? Where does it go? Is it something that's paid line by line? Is it given to the placing parent? Is it something that's given directly to where the bill is being paid? So these are all good questions to ask ahead of time so that you can ensure full understanding in advance of starting the program with an adoption professional. But also, I think it's good to ensure you feel good about it, that it aligns with your values.
Right. One other thing that's just really good to know, and that is most states also allow the placing parent to receive PRE up to 6 weeks after delivery as well, during the time she is considered to be recovering from giving birth. So.
Also, I think for families who are super new to adoption, if you've assisted with PRE, that does not mean that the birth mother is now bound
Good
to
point.
complete her consent or TPR. Hey, we're tying
Good.
them together.
That's right. Good point. Can I share something with you that's been really meaningful in my own walk alongside adoption? It's called the Adoption Prayer Bracelet, and it's become one of my favorite ways to stay connected with adoption through prayer. Whether you're in the middle of your own adoption journey, standing with someone who is, or you simply feel called to pray over adoption, this bracelet serves as a quiet reminder to pause and lift it all up to God. It's simple, beautiful, and full of purpose. You can check it out online at adoptionprayerbracelet.com. So let's move on to the next one, which is not unique to adoption in any way. And my guess is you might know this, and that is FMLA. That is something that you probably have heard of at work. That is our Family and Medical Leave Act, and that is a federal law that has allowed employees to take time off for various reasons. It's good to know when you are adopting, regardless of your path to adoption. It's good to know what your employer provides for, and not just in FMLA, but also in maternity leave. Many employers now do allow official maternity or paternity leave for adoption in addition to, giving birth biologically. So before you adopt, you want to find out what your employer's policy is on that. And you may also want to explore your options through FMLA, as well as if your state has any other paid leave options that you're able to take advantage of in the days and weeks after you receive your child. Even if your child is not a newborn, doesn't require that newborn care, it is so important for bonding to be able to have that time off to really start those family bonds. I mean, I think that's one of the most valuable things families can do, especially with a child who is a little older, is having those early days and weeks where your focus is on parenting and bonding.
And this can also be something that begins while you are in another state awaiting your ICPC clearance. So just rest assured that most adoptive parents start using their maternity, paternity leave for adoption and or PTO and or FMLA while they're in the other state.
Absolutely. Next is one that I don't know that I hear a tremendous amount, but CM. People may see that, might see it through your home study, might see it through the agency you're working with. CM can stand for case manager. And that often refers to the person who is working with the expectant mothers or the APs, or it may even be someone who is managing your HS, your home study. So it also can sometimes appear at hospitals. They can have a CM there, and that can be someone who is working in the case management department who may help patients sign up for Medicaid or other services, local services in the area.
Mm-hmm. Heather, while you were saying that, it made me think of one that we didn't include in our show prep today. Tell me if you know this one, ASP.
I did not. And that's actually one, that's an old one. We don't hear that nearly as much anymore. That is adoption service provider. And that is something that I'm going to say used to, although it still does refer to someone who is specialized in providing adoption services and adoption counseling to EMs. They ASPs often did different parts of home studies too. They were really kind of a social worker who had a special designation because they had adoption experience.
Mm-hmm. And some states would require, in addition to your adoption agency, in addition to your home study, in addition to perhaps an attorney, an ASP to come in at the time when you're receiving placement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Adoption service provider.
That's a good one. Yeah, I haven't
it's kind of like a doula,
while.
But for adoption, I feel like.
Let's talk about this next one, also kind of connected. It's a little more common to SW.
Mm-hmm. Social SW. Worker. Yep.
Yeah.
Social worker. And the social worker could be the CM.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And where we really see social workers here is going to be your home study provider is probably going to be a social worker. If you are adopting domestically and adopting a newborn, and you are going to go and receive the baby or care for the baby in the hospital, you are going to interact with the SW there. She will be a great help and assistance in the hospital. And you know, depending on the legal steps of your adoption, you probably will see your SW again after you're home with your baby. She will come, he will come and do a post-placement visit. Boy, that would have been a good one too, a PPV.
Oh, wait, I know why though. PPV, okay. Maybe people aren't thinking as far as medical terms.
But
PPV,
in adoption,
post-placement visits.
Yes. Right. After you're home with your baby or child, the your SW comes back to do a PPV for your HS. And that's part of the finalization of your adoption. It's just those post-placement visits to stop in, see how everything's going. If you are adopting an older child, no matter where you're adopting from, it can really be a help to have those connections with your home study provider, because you may find yourself needing resources, counseling resources, parenting, discipline resources that maybe you weren't really prepared for. For instance, I know we worked with a family who were already parents and they had adopted this little girl, and she was about 4 years old, brought her into their family. Their children were older. They were still in the home, but they were older. And they realized that their form, their methods of parenting and discipline and weren't working. They knew how to be parents to the children they'd already parented, but this one that came in at four with likely some history of trauma, likely some history of neglect, what they were doing, it was almost having the opposite effect of what they wanted to do. And that connection with that social worker at their post-placement visits, and even beyond, after the adoption had finalized, they still had that connection so they could reach out and say, you know what, here are some of the things that we need help with. And she was able to direct them to adoption competent therapists to get them that hands-on help they needed and get them the tools they needed to parent this child differently in the way the child needed to be parented.
Mm-hmm. And certainly every child, no matter whether adopted or biological, is going to be parented uniquely. So it's sometimes hard to know, are these differences in your parenting experience based on personality or also a little bit of, implied trauma as well?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So, you know, I've got a little bonus section here, Kim, and it's really for parents who are looking to that domestic newborn adoption. And, you know, a lot of times when parents are going that route, they may not have been pregnant themselves. They may be looking at adoption after, you know, trying fertility methods. And so some of the terms and phrases used in delivering a baby, they may not be real familiar with. The first one I have on the list is EDD.
Mm-hmm.
And that stands for Estimated Due Date.
Yes.
That is when the expectant mother that you're matched with, that would be when the baby is due. And that's important to know, but it's also important to know, don't put a lot of stock in that because the first letter E is estimated.
Estimated. Right.
And, pregnancies, if you're not aware, 40 weeks is normal, but 38 to 42 weeks, which is a 4-week span, is considered full term. So, and now some people are even going, well, 37 weeks is considered full term. So it is definitely an estimated due date, but don't be surprised if you're matched with an expectant mom and her EDD is set and her water breaks 2 weeks early. It happens, or even more.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You're on call.
That's right. Next, we have NICU, NICU.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a department in hospitals. Not all hospitals have this, but it is, NICU stands for Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. And that is, it's kind of like an ICU. That's the last four letters, ICU, for babies. And sometimes when babies are born, they're going to need a little more assistance if, for instance, they are born early, or if they are born needing a little extra support. Because today in hospitals, most babies, you know, after they're delivered, they're checked out. It's pretty common that they stay with mom. They may go to the nursery to be weighed and measured, but they stay with mom. But sometimes babies just need a little more support after birth, or again, if they're early, sometimes if they've been exposed to substances like drugs, they may need a little more care. And the NICU provides the opportunity for that with specially trained nurses and certainly more monitors and tools and everything needed to care for babies.
Next. And I really like this next one because adoptive parents usually are interested to know this because they want to know, is the baby thriving? How do we know if the baby's thriving? Well, after the birth, within minutes and moments, every baby is assessed by the medical professional and given a score. And what is that score, Heather?
That is the APGAR score. Yeah. And babies are given an APGAR score, a 1 minute and 5 minutes. And APGAR stands for, if you really want to know, Google it and read a lot more about it. But APGAR stands for activity, pulse, grimace, appearance, and respiration. And the medical professional is looking at each of those five things and given those scores, like I say, 1 in 5 minutes. So often you will hear, you know, baby had an Apgar score of 7 and 9. That means out of 10, the baby scored 7 at 1 minute and 9 at 5 minutes. And usually Apgar scores over 7 are considered normal. And it's important to know that this isn't a diagnostic tool. This doesn't mean that, oh, you know, my baby had an Apgar score of 6. So that means in his life, he is going to, no. It is just a report. It's a quick score to evaluate and share how a baby is doing immediately after they have gone through really the trauma of birth.
Mm-hmm. And then a few minutes later to see, are they holding steady or improved?
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a tool. It's not a diagnosis. So, you know, just for fun, Kim, I got a few acronyms that I think I wish existed, mm-hmm. especially for APs.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is HTWW.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hurry, the wait is worthwhile.
Mm, I love that.
And I think, you know, I think it's just good to keep in mind that no matter what your path to adoption, it probably has a wait, whether it's in domestic adoption, a wait to be chosen, whether it's international adoption, the wait for the whole process, in adopting through the foster system. Again, it can be a wait for the right child or a wait for TPR or any number of waits. But I think it's always good to not focus on the wait, but focus on the journey. The wait will be worthwhile. And how can we make the most of the wait? Because whether it's, you know, I think of like a family who's fostering a child that has been told, yes, you're going to have the opportunity to adopt, you know, that is very hopeful, but it isn't always we've both worked with families who thought they were going to adopt a child through the foster system only to have that not work out. So, you know, whatever your wait to adopt, it's good to enjoy every moment you can and not live in a kind of in a continual state of waiting. Enjoy today. Don't spend today waiting, looking to, I can't wait till I get there, because today doesn't come again. And when you do get to the end of the wait, it is 100% worthwhile, but make the most of the wait. You know, enjoy, live your life, take the vacation, make the home improvement, finish your degree, you know, do those things knowing that at the end of your wait will be that joy of parenthood. But you don't want to put everything on hold till you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Next is calm, C-A-L-M.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I know, Kim, as you talk to families, something you love, and that is when they continue asking, learning, and moving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Knowledge is power, and adoption is the perfect example of knowledge being power. So continue asking questions, continue always learning as much as you can every day, and continue movement. Don't lose your momentum, even though your checklists may have been complete, and you are waiting in a season of your adoption where you don't have control over when the next step happens. You have to make sure you're keeping things current and keeping your own momentum personally by, like Heather said, addressing some of those projects or taking some of those vacations that maybe you put on hold for now or while perhaps going through infertility or other medical challenge that could have been part of what brought you to adoption in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's calm. I love that. Continue asking, learning, and moving. Again, this is under the category of acronyms we wish existed. So if you go to someone and say calm, they're probably not going to know. But for the sake of our conversation, I think it's a great one. Continue asking, learning, and moving. And that's something good to just write down and put it on a post-it somewhere. And every time you see it, you tell your brain, calm, continue asking, learning, and moving. And train
that's
your
right.
brain. Yeah.
That's right. Because even going back to HTWW, you know, you don't want to just wait. You want to keep moving, keep learning, keep asking, all of those things. Those are important to keep. So our last one, and again, this is the acronyms we wished existed. Our last one on the list is coffee, COFFEE. And I will say, if this was a real one, we'd probably be hearing it all the time. And that is, can our family finally enjoy everything? And I, you know, adoption is a process and there are so many steps and there's so much to learn. And certainly it is worthwhile, but I love it when families get to that point of done with the process and they feel like, okay, we can finally enjoy everything. And again, I encourage you, enjoy everything along the way, but definitely that feeling of, you know, we're here, we've reached everything. That's a great place to be. And, you know, I know one family I recently worked with, they finalized their adoption and it was almost like they said, okay, what next? And it's like, no, that the next is done. And it was a sense of relief. They actually had a hard time settling into it for a while because they were so used to the process and so used to keeping an eye on, you know, their background check dates and their home study updates. And, you know, it's like, no, now you settle into adoptive parents. And what that looks like is, again, going to be determined by your path to adoption. If it was through domestic adoption, you know, your new normal probably incorporates an open relationship. So it's going to be how you're including the PP, the placing parents, as your child grows. If it was through international adoption, you know, you're now probably looking to incorporate your child's culture into your own family traditions. And it might be looking to address any of the challenges that pop up as a child begins to adjust to a brand new culture, maybe even a new language. And if it was an adoption through the foster system, you know, probably getting that parenting support is going to be important. And maybe it's not needed, but again, it's bringing a new life into your existing family and learning more about parenting through adoption. So, you know, getting to the end, having that moment of coffee, and really enjoying everything can be such a great end to the adoption journey.
I love it. And just so you know, we typically don't go around speaking in acronyms.
No.
These are more in written form, texting, emailing, paperwork,
right,
notes that you might see. But from time to time, we might use one of these verbally. So there you go. No more decoding required.
And remember, you know, we share this to really share knowledge. This isn't information you need to memorize. You don't need to write it down. You will learn as you go. And just know that's one of the things we love sharing on this podcast is what we know in order to help you.
Mm-hmm. And if there is an acronym that you've been waiting for us to mention that we didn't cover, send it in to us and maybe we'll mention it in a future podcast.
That's great. Thanks for listening. Thanks for having fun with us today. And we want to remind you, be sure to subscribe and share.
Thanks for joining us on Let's Talk Adoption. If you'd like to learn more about today's episode, please visit letstalkadoption.com. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss a conversation. Until next time, take care and God bless.